Welcome, everyone, to the Transformation Nurse Academy podcast. This is our weekly episode, Talk with Kevin, where we cover topics for all nursing fields with extra emphasis on emergency and critical nursing. Get ready for candid discussions that explore the vast landscape of nursing and beyond.
Yes, this is Kevin, and I have my guest here, Amy. And Amy, I know you told me your last name. Don't tell me. Let me look over here. I got to look at my Facebook page and shit so I can fuck it up. Carmody. Amy Carmody. If you can, Amy, just introduce yourself. Where do you work? I mean, you don't have to mention names, but yeah. Like, what do you do? You know, where do you work? What area? Where do you live and stuff like that? Talk about your nursing.
Sure. My name's Amy Carmody. Have been a nurse since 1996.
Worked in old like me.
Yes, I am. I am old and I feel it every day. Been in healthcare since 1991. Started as a CNA. I live in Colorado.
Are you from Colorado?
I am not. So you'll hear the y'alls and the fixin' twos. Born in Louisville, Kentucky, and raised in West Texas.
I'm from Mesquite, Texas.
Ah, so yes. Yeah. We're neighbors.
I know the y'alls.
Yep.
Right. That's good.
Absolutely. Graduated from Angelo State University. Anyway.
So you graduated from San Angelo.
Graduated in 96, and I've been a nurse since then. Did a little bit of everything. Pretty much everything except mom, baby, and OR and peds. Hurt my knee and had to have knee surgery. Couldn't go back to work. I was working in the ER. Couldn't go back to that strenuous life quick enough and needed to work. And, you know, this was 2002 when they still use want ads in the paper. That tells you anything about old. Saw an ad that said nurses work from home. You know, it was also legit. So that tells you also how old I am. And I thought, well, I can apply to that because I can certainly do that. And it was a hospice. They were looking for triage nurses. And I was.
But how does a hospice nurse work from home? Don't you got to go to the person's house to help see them to the next phase of their journey in this universe? Like,
they were looking for triage nurses. So somebody to hire.
Like a telephonic triage?
Yeah, they were looking for someone to send people out on the visits. This was the original hospice in this area at that time, the largest one. And I was not hired for that position. As it so happens, I rode up in the elevator with the vice president of the agency. And it turns out that she was from Abilene. And we knew some of the same people.
That's good, though, right?
Oh, very good. I had no idea who she was, but she liked me, I guess. And they ended up creating a position for me that was kind of a hybrid. And so it was for a case manager / on-call nurse, which was good because I think I would have not done very well if I'd have had to triage just straight off. And they did a really good job with orienting nurses.
But what are you doing as a triage? I mean, when you say triage, I'm thinking ED triage. So what do you do to triage? Like to see if they meet hospice criteria?
No, you're getting the calls when people are calling it, you know, after the office is closed. And so you're taking those calls and seeing who needs what. Do they need, is it somebody who needs a medication called into the pharmacy? Do they need a social work visit?
So you're saying these patients are already hospice patients. You're just, they're calling you saying, hey, my mama's not feeling good. She ran out of morphine at 3 o'clock in the morning. Can you give me some morphine?
Something like that. Or she had a call. Can you come out and, you know, pick her up? Or
no, I'm not gonna come out and pick her up. You can't pick her up, that's your mama.
That's what we're going out there for sometimes.
Yeah, I could be a hospice nurse. I get in trouble, like, no, I'm not coming out, you pick her up. And why did you wait till 3 o'clock in the morning to run out of morphine?
You know what? I can't tell you how many times we have said that to each other.
I would say to the patient and the family, that's why I couldn't be a hospice nurse. I get in trouble.
We have,
you know, the pharmacies are open during the fucking day, right? They're not open at 3 a.m. Like, what the?
We have said that to each other, but we do not say that to patients.
I know. But that's why I don't work out, because I would say it.
Yeah, you do not say that.
I get you.
But when you get those calls at 3 a.m, and usually it's not the patient's families, usually it's the assisted livings who are doing their med reconciliations at 2 a.m, and they're awake, so they're calling the hospice.
Really? Like, yep. I can't wait?
Yep.
Are you on call 24/7?
Yep.
Oh, shit, is that a salary position?
Well, so...
I definitely can't be bugging. You're just bugging me in my nighttime and I can't sleep over medicine?
It just depends. It depends on the hospice. There were some hospices I worked at where it was 7 on, 7 off.
Oh, I got
you. And so you were working from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. Monday through Friday, and then Friday 5 p.m. till Monday morning 8 a.m. So you were on that whole weekend.
I got you.
Those weekends really sucked.
Right. That's a lot of work and stuff.
Yeah. And then there were some.
Is it a salary position or hourly?
So my first job that I was with for 7.5 years was hourly, and we worked 8-hour shifts, and that was really nice.
I got you. All right.
Every position after that was salaried.
That kind of sucks, though, because you know, people bug you and you're 24/7. But I guess it's nice if you work from home, but you don't always work from home. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, it's not always triage because sometimes you're going out. You're the person. Right. So it just depends.
Who's paying for my gas?
We got paid mileage.
That's good. All right.
Yeah. So you're getting paid mileage, not always what the government.
I know. I know.
But you get paid mileage, and it's pretty, I mean, it was a pretty nice job.
Better than picking up heavy patients and breaking your kneecaps and stuff.
Oh, you're doing that too. You're doing that too.
Yeah, never mind. I'm not doing it.
You're getting called out, and trust me, you're out there, and you're the only one out there. So you have,
the family can't help you?
They can't,
They can, they just choose not to.
Well, no, sometimes they're elderly too, you know?
Oh, I got you. I'm with you. Okay. Like a husband and wife, old husband and wife, he can't really do much, or she can't really do much. Yeah, that kind of fucked up.
Yeah, so you're out there and it's, or the kids are elderly, you know, or they're injured, you know, disabled themselves, or the patient weighs a lot.
So I didn't know that you could be on hospice and be in assisted living. I thought this is just mine from what I know. That's why I had you on, because I don't know that much about hospice. I'm going to be honest. You're there to help send them to the next phase of their journey by giving them a couple morphine and like, bye. I know, but that's what I think most people think when it comes to hospice, if you're not familiar with hospice.
Sure.
That's why I wanted to talk
about this. We can take care of patients wherever they are.
Can a hospice patient be a DNR? Can a hospice patient have a DNR? I thought they were ready to go see Jesus.
A hospice patient is not required to be a DNR. We have had many that are full codes.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense. Then why be hospice? Because I thought hospice meant you are helping people to the next journey.
Believe me, I've wondered that many times myself. But
it's not in the rules and regulations?
It is not. They are not required to be a DNR. So there's two things that a hospice patient has to be for.
Is this nationwide or is it Colorado specific?
No, this is nationwide. This is Medicare regulation. Right. Now, obviously, for private insurance, it's
can change
different.
Whatever they can add to and all that. I got you.
Exactly. Okay. But the Medicare reg says they have to have Medicare Part A, obviously, right? That's part one. Part two is they have to have a terminal prognosis as determined by two physicians, if the disease runs its course within 6 months or less.
In other words, my terminal disease can only be 6 months or less. If it's longer than 6 months, I can't get on hospice.
If it runs its natural course, and that's how these people can stay on for longer than 6 months, because even Medicare understands that doctors are not God.
I got you. Okay.
Because they can't prognosticate. That's if it runs its natural course.
If you're a hospice patient and you have a terminal illness, which means you're about to go see Jesus or whoever you believe in, and it's signed off by two MDs, I can be a hospice patient. Medicare Part A will pay for it. And I can still say, I want you to do everything for me to keep me alive.
And I should say, let me back this up. It doesn't have to be MDs. It can be, well, it has to be an MD or a DO to certify. But an NP or a PA can refer to hospice.
Right. I got you. All right. So I got a boatload of questions here.
Sure.
We'll try to get through them all and stuff. But what inspired you to pursue a career in nursing, particularly in the field of hospice? Did you I know why you got into nursing already. We talked about that. But is it only because you got hurt that you wanted to get in hospice? Why didn't you do something else? Why hospice? You like to see people die?
So, you know, I went into nursing because my grandmother was a nurse.
Right.
I got into hospice, honestly, because I saw that ad. And when I got there, it just clicked for me. We can see patients one at a time. We get to spend time with them.
Actual nursing care.
Actual nursing care. Right. You know, we get to, you know, I've gotten to take lunch to patients. I've gotten to spend time with them.
To get meals on wheels.
That's right. Play games with them. I've actually stopped a patient, helped a patient's family stop the patient from being scammed.
Oh, right on. I got you. Yeah.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Right. Because they're going to pray on the week and stuff. That's right. Raising this. Oh, that's sick, isn't it?
It is sick. I mean, I walked in and I'd seen her for a while. I'd been seeing her and I realized she had mail piling up on her table. And she was one that was always really organized. She told me that the person that paid her bills wasn't coming. And I reached out to her family and come to find out,
there was nobody paying her bills.
The person wasn't coming and they were still charging her. And not only that, they were taking money out of accounts and over $30,000.
That's ridiculous, man. Mm-hmm. All on the dime of an old lady dying and shit.
Yeah.
I know that was a memorable experience, but can you share another memorable experience from working in a hospital that has a profound impact on you?
Yeah. This, I actually do have permission to share. We were given written permission, so this was years ago. We had a patient, we had a program at a hospice that I worked at. We had this program and this patient had been a dancer and he was just slowing down, right? And sorry, it's just one of those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, okay.
All he wanted was to have his favorite meal from his country club and to dance. And so we reached out to his dance partners and they brought him his favorite meal from his country club and they came over and they danced with him in his living room.
That's nice.
And he took his oxygen off there in his living room. And let me tell you, I cannot hear the song, "Hey Mambo, Mambo," without a big smile on my face.
Because you're thinking about him.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, I couldn't do that anywhere else.
Yeah, that's good, though. But see, you're making a difference, though. That's what people don't realize.
It makes such a difference. You know, the oxygen didn't matter. Nothing else mattered.
Right. I get that. I'm sure you have seen some things that were worse, though. I won't ask about those, but I can imagine.
I've seen
the things you see, right? So what unique challenges do you face as a registered nurse in the hospice setting and how do you navigate them?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously we don't have help in the homes. You know, if we know ahead of time, we can take somebody with us. But, you know, we're walking into people's homes where we don't know what we're walking into. So we're walking into conditions sometimes.
Right. Have you ever gotten somebody where their loved one was dying and they don't want them to go and then they're blaming you for it? And have you ever felt unsafe?
Yes. I've had a gun pointed at me before.
Would you say that's part of the job?
No.
Did you press charges?
Not. At the time, no.
See, I would, why do look at me. How come fucking nurses don't press charges? That's not appropriate.
I agree. I was young.
I don't see. Right. But we're made to feel like it's part of our job.
My boss said to me the typical thing, what could you have done differently?
Motherfucker. Was it a guy or a girl?
It was a girl.
See, so I don't want to hear any of you motherfuckers talking shit about dudes. Cause we would have went over there and kicked ass and shit. What could mean? What could I have done?
What I said was, I guess I could have not gone to the visit.
That's crazy.
That's the only thing I could have not done.
Yeah, that's stupid. Like,
I actually ended up leaving that job.
You should have made her fucking go.
I tried. Actually tried.
Yeah, she's too busy in her office and stuff.
Yep. Oh, it was bad.
So
that
how do
part
you...
probably shouldn't be.
No, you're fine. It's okay. Nobody knows who he or she is, so it's okay. We didn't mention any company names. Don't worry. You should go listen to all my episodes. I talk shit about everybody. I do because I'm trying to make a change in nursing because we put up with too much crap.
We do.
People think it's part of our job, and it's not. It's ridiculous. We don't need to be unsafe.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. That was terrifying. There have been times I have been terrified, and there have been other times, and yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Well, I just was in the ED, I don't know, like a week ago, and the patient was up to his number, but I'm going through his stuff, and he's got a damn screwdriver, because he probably used it to protect himself, because he was a homeless dude.
Mm-hmm.
If he wasn't, if he would have became violent, and I didn't go through the stuff, I would have never known it. He could have stabbed me and shit.
Yeah.
So I tell nurses, always go through their patient's belongings so you know what's in there. And if it's something like that, give it to the security and stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. All right. So how do you...
I was just going to say, you know, that's one thing we'd have to deal with, whether we deal with... I have to tell you this one time back before computer...
Right. Paper charging.
Yeah. We had a patient that died. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I went to the death and the information I had was not correct. And I went and knocked on the door at 1 a.m. Lights were on. It was a party.
Oh, shoot. A party for the dead person?
No. They said, oh, they moved. I said, oh, they said... Didn't think the party was that dead.
So did your patient really move?
Patient moved.
And didn't tell you?
Well, I had, my stuff wasn't updated. I don't know if we knew, but my stuff wasn't updated. Right.
That's crazy, right? I'm here to see the dead person.
I'm like, oh.
Can you imagine that? You're going to the wrong house? That's good, though.
You know, like we have, that. You know, but GPS that leads us to the wrong place. Being given directions like turn at the blue mailbox on the dirt road. And
I get that. I don't know what's going to happen when people don't have maps and shit. And all the power goes off. They don't want to know where to go.
Wildfires, you know, right. I know you being in California, right?
Yes.
Have to deal with those too. We had one that came into Colorado Springs a few years, about 10 years ago, and then up the mountain a little bit and having to deal with disasters. Right. And
crazy. When
you're dealing with patients that are not in one place, it's a little bit different than being in the hospital. So
you got to drive everywhere to the different locations to find them.
And you got to have a plan for what you're going to do with those patients.
So who makes up the plan, you or the company?
We do. The executive director has to make it up for each office.
I got you. All right. That's good. So, I mean, at least you're thinking about the patients ahead of time in case things happen.
You have to have an emergency plan for each office.
Yeah. How do you approach providing emotional support to patients and their families during end-of-life care?
So it's really about listening. You have to listen to what their actual need and questions are. You know, you can't help them if you don't know what the concern is.
Right.
So if they're worried about pain you listen and find out, okay, and tell them, okay, well, you're worried about pain. I can tell you how I'm going to help you with pain. If they're worried because, you know, they're worried about going to hell, me answering that I'm going to take care of their pain isn't going to help them.
Right.
For nothing. So I'm going
to. How do you as a nurse minister to somebody who's worried about going to hell?
What if I'm going to reach out to my chaplain,
okay,
and have them come in and help them with that? Because, you know, hospice has four, you know, we are required to have a holistic approach.
Right.
So it's part of our conditions of practice.
Right.
Participation.
What if they don't believe in heaven and hell?
Well, then I'm going to find out, you know, is it family dynamics? Is it, you know, what else is going on? If it's not that, then maybe it's family dynamics. I'm going to reach out to my social worker and get them involved.
Do you really get a lot of support, or is it like pulling teeth to get support?
We have the social worker and the chaplain as part of the team.
So they're part of the hospice company and team already. You don't have to go and look for them and they're there.
Right. So that's a requirement. We have the physician, the nurse, the social worker, and the chaplain as all part of the team. And so as soon as they come on service, the nurse, of course, is the first person to see them. And then the chaplain and the social worker have 5 days to do a comprehensive eval, unless the patient declines the chaplain and the social worker.
Right.
But we try really hard to get them in to see them because of situations like this. We want them to build that rapport as soon as possible so that they have that.
That answered my next question I was going to ask you already. So that's good. So how do you handle instances where patients express fear or uncertainty about their end of life journey like that? Like you just said that you call social workers, you use other kinds of support. So.
Yeah.
So what about a situation that you had to make a difficult decision in regarding a patient's care in a hospice setting, and how did you approach it? What's been like one of the hardest decisions you had to make?
We don't typically make decisions for patients. That's not our job. We are there to guide them, to give them the information to make the decisions.
Do you ever give your advice?
We shouldn't.
I know, I'm just asking. I mean, we're human. I know, but we're human. You know, people
ask. So. I try really hard to keep my views and my opinions out of it. I mean, obviously we are human, but
Can I ask you a personal question?
Of course.
Are you a super religious person?
Am I super religious?
Are you religious at all? Spiritual?
I'm religious, I guess.
The only reason why I'm asking is because a lot of people that are super religious don't believe in giving morphine or kind of helping people move to the other side because they see us as murdering them.
You know,
I know it's a hard one, isn't it?
No, not really. You know, when I worked in the ER, and I don't know if the teaching on this has changed from 20 plus years ago, but what I learned back then is that morphine actually helps the oxygen get to the heart. So if somebody is struggling to breathe, it actually helps.
Right.
So are you
saying that nurses who think you're pushing the patient to go see Jesus sooner or killing them don't understand their medications? Is that what I heard you say?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, to a degree, not
completely. I know that. I got
you know, obviously,
I'm
if
not
you're
trying to put words in your mouth.
Oh, no. But if you're giving 2 milligrams of morphine, I mean, to somebody who's been taking morphine, or, you know, I'm not going to come in and give somebody 20 milligrams of morphine who's been opiate naive. But when you're talking about somebody who's sitting there struggling, 2 milligrams of morphine is not going to kill them.
My personal experience, my mom had a massive stroke and she wasn't her anymore. And so my brother and her husband, my mother's husband, wanted to move to another hospital, but she wound up having another massive stroke and made her situation even worse. So I told her, I said, just put her on comfort care, give her some morphine and help her move along to the next side. And so when the nurse came in, Texas nurse, by the way, she gave 20 milligrams of morphine. I'm like, oh, I like you. Because most nurses won't do that.
Right.
You know, you give that much, you know what's about to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, it depends too. And I would say I'm probably at this point more spiritual than I am religious. And
right.
And I am, you know, I was raised very religious and I do believe in God and heaven and hell. And but I am very much about taking care of the patient and seeing them comfortable and making sure that their needs are met. And I don't want to see somebody struggle. And, you know, you give them, you start with a little bit. And this is how I was taught when I started in hospice. You start with a little bit. If that doesn't work, you give them a little bit more.
Right.
If that doesn't work, you give them a little bit more.
Right.
And you give them a little bit until you find out, you give them the least effective amount.
Right.
And you give it until you know what that effective amount is, and then you know how much you need to give them.
Right. Yeah, I'm okay with that. I get that. When you have a hospice patient, though, if you did, I'm not saying you would, but if you did give so much that it made them stop breathing, are you going to resuscitate them?
No.
Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
I see what you're asking, but if somebody's a DNR, you don't resuscitate.
Right.
If somebody is a full code and they're struggling that much, you're not going to be sitting there giving morphine, giving morphine. If they're struggling, they're going to be in the hospital.
So do hospice patients go to the hospital?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just going to be honest. I think if a hospice patient came to the ER, most ER nurses would be saying what?
I know.
Why the fuck are you here for? Why aren't you in home dying and shit? But I'm just being for real.
Absolutely.
People don't like that. They may not like what I'm saying, but it's true. I know that most people think that.
I know. So here's the thing. What Medicare says is patients can get treatment for things that are not related to their hospice diagnosis.
Right.
So if a hospice patient is on services for, say, cancer, which is probably not the greatest example.
But I got you.
Say they fall and break their hip and they want to have hip surgery. They can go and get hip surgery. And, you know, all things being equal, and it's not related in any way, shape, or form, right, they can go and have that hip surgery, and it's going to be covered.
But a lot of people see that as wasting resources and supplies because the person has a what?
Less than 6 months.
All right. See what I mean? So I get both sides, but it's a hard decision, isn't it?
But when you think about it, is that broken hip going to cause them a lot of pain for that last 6 months?
Yeah.
So that's not gonna, you know what I'm saying?
You're not giving them a quality of life for the last 6 months they got.
Right.
I got that. I have a different viewpoint. Like, I don't give a shit. You can do whatever you want to do. If we as a society are willing to pay for it and you want me to code your 104-year-old grandma that's got stage 4 cancer, I'm going to do it because that's your decision as a family member. I don't take it personal. I don't get upset because I'm there 12 hours, so.
I mean, I understand the thought process from both sides, having worked in the ER, so I get it.
But it's hard, though.
I see it from both sides. I just get it.
That's why I think that nurses should work different areas so they can see all around and kind of have a different viewpoint, and maybe we'll change our thought process on how we deal with patients and stuff if we are a little bit more well-rounded.
Yeah.
I do. I get that. So can you see what strategies do you employ to maintain your own emotional well-being while caring for patients who are nearing the end of life? So you see a lot of death and dying. So how do you keep from going crazy?
So it's
going to take an emotional toll on you one day if you don't take care of yourself.
I actually am working remote right now. I am doing audits for my company now. I had some health problems and I just couldn't do hands-on care. I actually stepped out of the field and was doing managerial before I came remote.
You went to the dark side.
I did because I wanted to make a difference. Okay. And I think I did. I got tired of saying something needs to change. And I decided I wanted to help be the change.
Yeah, that's good. That's why I started doing this. I want to be the change. Yeah.
So I started wanting to make a difference, and I did make a difference for some people. Not everybody liked me. Never going to happen, right? You're never going to make a difference for everybody, or you're never going to have everybody like you.
Right.
But I did make a difference for some people. That said, I still, even as a manager, was still going out and seeing patients from time to time because I didn't ever want to be the person that I, you know, I figured if I didn't want to do anything, I wouldn't expect my team to right. do.
I got that. No, I got that.
So
how do you prioritize and manage your workload now that you don't have to really go out anymore, do you?
No, not anymore.
Audits and stuff.
But what I did back then was I discovered what I could do. I discovered how much I could do. And that's what I said I could do.
Oh, that's good, though. You set boundaries.
I had to set those boundaries. And that's all I expected my team to do, too, when I was in management.
And we're going to talk more about boundaries tomorrow with Matt Norman. His book is called The Restored Nurse. And he talks about setting boundaries. So
that's awesome. Good.
So as a seasoned hospice nurse, what key insights or perspectives would you like to share with nurses and other disciplines better to prepare them for dealing with challenging outcomes, such as unexpected declines or complications for hospice nurses? I know it's a big question.
It's really important to utilize the hospice team. You know, remember to, they're here to help you. So make sure you're calling them. If your patient's already on hospice, reach out to that hospice team.
So if I'm an ER nurse, can I reach out to a hospice team? Would they come and help?
If the patient's on hospice, I mean, obviously, if the patient's in the ER, they're not going to be coming and taking care of the patient. But call them, make sure, you know, communication is key. They should be communicating with you when that patient is there, if they know. Unfortunately, we don't always know when a patient is heading to the ER. Right. But if that patient gets there, call them, let them know they're there. They can communicate with you what's going on. You know, it's key. Let them know we can, you know, I was always communicating with the ER when our patients went there, with the facility staff, the nursing homes, the assisted livings, anything like that. We can help with, you know, our social workers can help with facilitating sometimes, especially if a patient has been a home patient when they're in the ER, and maybe that's not exactly ideal for with them going back. They can maybe help with placement.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. What are some common misconceptions that nurses from other disciplines, like we, you know, this is how you and I got here. What are some common misconceptions from nurses from other disciplines that we may have about hospice care? How can they be addressed to promote better understanding in our collaboration?
Well, you know, a big one is that all hospice patients have to be DNRs. Another one is that we kill patients. You know, another one is that, you know, that they come on and they can't be on for any length of time. Another one is that
DNT.
DNR means DNT.
Right.
That we can't take care of IVs, or that we can't do anything, or that we don't have any skills. You know, I've had patients, it's been rare, but I have had even a patient in the past, or well, probably more than one, but I know of one in particular that was on TPN.
Right.
Again, that's rare.
I was going to ask you, don't you get a lot of end-of-life care patients or hospice patients that have Mediports, things like that?
We do. Had patients with Mediports, patients with PICs, patients with central lines, patients we've had to start IVs on, patients we've done sub-Q for, you know, some gentle fluids or even some pain meds. I mean, that's been years, but I want to say it's been a long time, but I think I've even done palliative sedation, but that's been a long time.
So we've, what do you say in a nice way? I don't care if you're nice or not, but what do you say to people when they say all hospice nurses kill people, or they're terrible and they don't do a good job? That's the only reason why I reached out to you, because I don't like when people say all this or all that, because it's not true. That's like saying all ER nurses suck ass. That's not true. Every discipline has shitty nurses.
You know, every profession has shitty something. Every profession has really great something.
Right.
There's just, what I say is, you know, I'm sorry that you've had that experience. I really hope that you come across somebody that does a good job someday, because that's not the experience that we've had. You know, we've even done external outside the hospital terminal extubations on people so that patients could be at home.
Where so you take them from the hospital to the house and then you extubate them so they could die at home.
Exactly.
Their family members and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. All right,
you know, we've done so many things and we work so hard so that patients can be where they want to be with their loved ones. And
trying to give them a dignified death.
Exactly. And give them the support and the comfort. And
well, let me ask you this, because I don't know the story, but I can see it already in my mind. What we were talking about, you and I, off. Maybe it's a cancer patient or some kind of hospice patient that had a lot of wounds, cubitus, because they were somewhere else or somebody wasn't taking care of them. You get involved as a hospice nurse, but are you a wound nurse?
I'm personally not.
Right. So how are you a hospice nurse able to take care of wounds if that's not your specialty?
You know, it depends on what the wound is, right?
Right.
You know, if it's a basic wound, we can take care of that. If it's a really horrific wound, we are able to reach out to specialties and have them come in.
Have you seen cases like that as a hospice nurse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I mean, not that you're ignoring it, it's just you got to follow protocol like everybody else.
Exactly. And usually we have patients, you know, a lot of times patients are at home, but we have patients that are in nursing homes and they have their wound care.
All right. They should do.
Their wound care nurses that are certified. And a lot of times they are certified. And so we will follow their guidelines because they are certified.
Right. That's their expertise.
And so we will often follow their, you know, we'll meet with them, we'll follow their expertise and we'll. The hospice regulations say that the hospice nurse or the hospice is to manage the care. So even if they're in a nursing home or someplace else, the hospice is to manage the care.
Right.
But if there is somebody that is certified, we will follow their regulations.
You're the team.
We're a team. We're a team together.
What I was going to say is you're the team lead.
Right.
But if you need to, you'll defer to expertise.
Absolutely. And we will bring in other people and we are able to bring in, if there isn't somebody like, you know, if they're not in a nursing home, we can bring in PT, speech, OT, if we need to. We can't bring them in to rehabilitate somebody. But we can bring them in for like a three-time eval or val and treat, like to help with safety training or something like that.
Yeah, I got you. All right. So my last question here. In your experience, what are some proactive measures nurses from various disciplines can take to mitigate the risk of adverse outcomes or complications in hospice patients? And how can they be integrated in our routine practice? I know that's a big one.
I'm sorry. My brain just went brain dead. I had a note and I had to look. I'm sorry.
It's all right. There's nothing wrong with notes. I got notes too. Look at me.
I had to look at that one because my.
So basically what I'm saying is, what the fuck can we do as other disciplines to help mitigate adverse outcomes, complications? So if we do get hospice patients, what can we do to try to mitigate adverse outcomes, or how can we keep from fucking up your shit with your patients?
Again, I think that really that communication is key and it's really number one. And I think that it's important to realize, like we were talking about earlier, that we all have different knowledge sets.
Right.
And that you come from an ER place, we come from an end of life place.
Right.
And, you know, a wound care nurse has that knowledge.
Right.
And we can all work together and respect is really key.
Right.
What I'm doing does not diminish what you're doing or what the wound care nurse does.
Right. But we're very territorial in nursing.
We are very territorial and we can be downright nasty.
Yeah,
sometimes.
We sure can, can't we? That's right. Well, mostly women, not men, of course.
No, never.
Never men. It's only women.
You know.
That was a joke, everybody. That was a joke. Calm the fuck down and shit.
Sadly, yeah.
I know.
Women tend to be a little more so, I think, sometimes.
I get it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where it stems from or why we behave this way, but.
I was just going to say, I don't know why we tend to be this way.
Yeah, I don't either. Makes no sense, does it?
It doesn't. You know, we are all working. We should all be working towards
the same goal.
The same goal to help the patient, right? And I just don't understand.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't either. So we're going to wrap this up, but what is it that you would like to leave with us as a hospice nurse so we can leave you in a good light?
Well,
I think you need a good light, but you know what I mean.
I just think that there's so much more to hospice. There, you know, when I first started, our medical director, who was actually one of the first people that started hospice, helped get hospice going in Colorado, told me that he would give us 18 months to learn it.
Holy cow.
And by then we better know it.
It's a lot of pressure.
Right. It's a lot. You're unlearning everything you learned in nursing school because in nursing school, you're taught to fix, to cure, and you're having to learn to stop thinking that way and to think about comfort and to think about treating, you know, you're thinking in a holistic way. And it's just very different. It's a very different mindset from everything else I've ever done.
Well, because you're trying to help somebody move to the other side of the spectrum of the universe, wherever you believe in, you know what I mean? Heaven, hell, the energy field, whatever it is. But I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're
the nurse, you want to treat people and fix them. But here, that's not your job. Your job is to just help them go through
and
this
process. You have to try and keep your beliefs out of it. So you're trying really hard to not say something wrong.
Right.
Because you're walking in and they may believe in Buddha or Hindi or whatever.
Right.
So they may not believe in Jesus or they may be an atheist or so you got to try not to step on.
Right.
So you have to be really careful because you're dealing with end of life.
Right.
So everything is right there also. So you've got to be really careful.
I get that. I get that. That's good. Yeah.
So there's just so much more to it than just, but also you still have to like be able to put in a Foley and put in a catheter and
to do all that stuff too.
Yeah.
Right. It's almost like being a psych nurse.
Yeah. And also, you know, deal with the family dynamics and also deal with the people with guns. And
well, I can't be a hospice nurse.
so many aspects that you just don't think about.
Right. That's right. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you spending your time with us. I know you didn't have to, but it was great that you did that.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. I hope you guys listened to us. Remember, this is Kevin and this was Amy on a Transformation Nurse Academy podcast. All right, you bitches, hope that you listen, download this shit, and don't be afraid to shout out to Amy and give her some feedback on being a hospice nurse.
Thank you.
Peace, bitches.
Don't miss out. Engage with us weekly. Share your thoughts, and let's transform the nursing landscape together.